Today's show is sponsored by Hexabuild. Started by IPv6 experts to drive worldwide adoption of IPv6, Hexabuild is the IPv6 training, education, and consulting company. If your projects include cloud, IoT, security, or, of course, networking, you will need IPv6, and Hexabuild is here to help you deploy and manage it successfully. Get training from some of the most knowledgeable and experienced IPv6 experts in the industry, instructors who literally wrote the books on IPv6. Head over to hexabuild.io to learn more. Our sponsor today is VMware. And did you know VMworld begins September 29th, 2020, and it's free? You should attend because it's interesting, it's informative, and let's face it, you're not going anywhere anyhow.
Yeah, so since you're not going anywhere, register now via bit.ly/D2C VMworld. That's bit.ly/D2C VMworld.
Welcome to Day 2 Cloud. Today, we're talking about the edge. You've heard people talk about the edge before, but we have a real expert on the show, Mark Teely, and he's going to share his knowledge about the edge with us and with you, dear listener. And one of the things that really struck me was how it's such early days for edge and how the opportunity is vast, but it's still very undefined. So it's something to keep your eye on, but I don't know if there's something actionable that you can do today. What struck you, Ethan?
Well, I've been skeptical of edge as, hey, it's just marketing, repackaging what we've been doing for 20 years in our data centers, and now we're just calling data centers edge. Well, no, it actually isn't that. And Mark made that pretty clear because we asked a pretty pointed question partway through this interview about that, and he explained what edge really is and why it is a new and distinct thing. And as you were saying, Ned, an untapped, well, not untapped, but just a brave new world of new technologies coming at us, which is great and horrifying, Ned, all at the same time.
Oh, it's just more change, and that's what we always need when it comes to IT. So enjoy this conversation about the edge. Mark Teely, welcome to Day 2 Cloud. You're the CEO and founder of Edgevana and just an awesome guy in general. We're very excited to have you on to talk about edge. In a few words, can you describe kind of who you are and your background a little bit?
Yeah, sure. First, thanks for having me on the show. Always a pleasure. And I guess speaking for myself, my long-term history has been really in delivering IT for internal organizations for the most part, right? I mean, that's where I cut my teeth from a technology standpoint, building everything from the physical data center itself to cloud infrastructure to global networks and support organizations, et cetera, et cetera. And I've done that at companies like HP and VMware and Gilead and Brocade and a couple of others. And that probably spans roughly 25, 26 years of my career. And then I spent most of the last 10 working on the sell side of the equation for small software startups in the cloud space, including most recently Apsara, a container management platform that was acquired by Ericsson. And I spent 5 years of that last 10 working in the data center space, helping build ecosystems and doing evangelism and things like that.
Okay, very cool. Very cool. So the way that I was introduced to you was actually I was trying to ramp up on my knowledge about edge, and I was told, go talk to Mark. He knows what's going on at the edge. And I did, and you schooled me, and that was awesome. So I wanted you to sort of share some of that knowledge with the listeners that we have for Day 2 Cloud. So why don't we start with the usual thing, which is like when we're talking about edge, are we talking about a device edge? Are we talking about something in the middle? Are we talking about software like Google Anthos, or is it like everything to you?
Yeah, well, to me, to everyone, edge means something specific. Generically, when I speak of edge, if I could be so bold as to say that I always have a common view of what edge is when I'm speaking of it, in generic terms, it's really the infrastructure and the delivery opportunities for, you know, low latency in proximity, IT infrastructure solutions that could be used for anything from helping with, running a factory to making efficiency or just-in-time repair decisions in a mill or a mining operation, or it could be consumer applications that people are using as they're experiencing someone's products in a particular town or services in a particular environment, like an event center or museum, things like that. So it's really all encompassing. But realistically, if we wanted to, we could probably start coming up with at least 10 or 11 different edge environment kind of condition statements around edge, but I don't know that that would solve a lot of problems for anybody listening.
Mark, in my mind, the big deal is if it's too slow to ship it up to cloud, have computing happen, and then get the results back, you need you said low latency in proximity, and that's what that means to me. You've got to have an answer right now, and so sending it off to cloud and getting it back is just would take too long for certain use cases.
Well, and that's the key, right? I mean, most people, interestingly enough, I've talked to some people that don't agree with what I'm about to say. I think that's probably changed in the last 2 or 3 years, but up to even just 2 or 3 years ago, people in companies that sell networking devices were saying that latency wasn't that important. And I was just blown away. But latency is the easy target when we talk about edge, right? I mean, and anyone who has ever done any building of applications, delivery of services to customers or used products and considered what the better option might be, understands the importance of latency. That being said, to your point, there's an interesting dynamic, I believe, that's occurring relative to edge that's occurring sooner than many people believed it would. And that's the rapid introduction of data collection and large data collection volumes. So it's one thing to say that I might be adding another 120 milliseconds round trip time for a transaction when you combine things like handshakes and packet size and loss and recovery and all that kind of stuff, along with actual physical light speed distance and route taken, et cetera. It's one thing to accommodate that, but it's another thing to just have too much data to justify sending somewhere. And so the first problem of, you know, packet size and distance and all that stuff is directly associated with potential performance of an application and whether or not the customer has a better experience or you can give better options for that experience to the customer because of low latency. But the other problem is really that large companies, many companies that I've talked to and worked with, some are just friends that I know are building edge for large organizations, very large organizations. Others are, part of organizations that I've actually worked with, or they're part of my discussions with companies now as CEO of Edgevana, is that there's so much data being collected at the edge that it wouldn't make any difference whether latency was the problem or not. It's just, we can't afford to send all this data somewhere. It doesn't make sense from a cost and from a bandwidth standpoint. It makes more sense to figure out the right way to get value from that data right near where it is. And then one more point before I give the microphone back, and that's that what I'm finding more and more, and this is especially true literally in the last couple of months while I've been talking to more customers from the Edgevana pulpit, is that it's data location from a sovereignty and from a rights protection and a privacy protection, et cetera, that's driving a lot of edge decisions around data location and utilization. So what's really, the reason I say all that's interesting is because latency is still the benefit, even though latency wasn't the original driver. Latency as a benefit means differentiation for product use for the customer. And when you get differentiation with a customer, you can't ask for pretty much anything more as a supplier, as a seller, as a retailer.
The one thing that resonated with me was the sort of what people like to refer to as data gravity, which is that just the fact that you're creating all this information out at the device edge, or if you have an assembly line, you're creating it there, and moving all that data quickly up to the cloud, or even at all up to the cloud, might not make sense. So instead, the whole idea of data gravity is the applications have to go to where the data is. So is that why we're seeing these sort of these pushes and advances to push computing further down out to the edge?
A big part of it is, right? And of course, depending on the application type, things that isn't talked about as much when we talk about edge gravity, and throw some acknowledgement over to Dave McCrory, who originally came up with the concept, is one of the important factors associated with data gravity is more than just I have, 10 terabytes worth of data in this place, and it'd be a lot easier for the application developers and the applications themselves to come to it than for me to send the data to somewhere else. That's all true, but it's also true that one of the important factors that I think is going to weigh more and more on the decisions at the edge relative to data is the metadata associated with the data. For instance, you scrape an image out of Facebook and you put it in Instagram even, which is a Facebook product, and it doesn't maintain the metadata for why that picture was captured or who made comments to it or whatever. And so that's a very simple example of what can be a very large problem for trying to move large data sets from the edge somewhere else.
How broadly are we going to see companies need edge? So that is this a niche thing where there's a few industries with these huge data sets that are impacted by this? They're the ones that need edge, but most of us, we can probably do everything we need up in public cloud somewhere.
Yeah, it's a good question. And considering the fact that I'm in a company that is in effect trying to help lower the barriers to entry for people who want to develop and build edge solutions, you'd think my automatic answer would be no. Of course, every single person ever was going to want an edge solution. Even you're going to want to create an edge address for your baby when they're born. And I don't know that that's true. In fact, I'm pretty certain that that's not true from a 100% standpoint. But I am becoming more and more certain of my own assertions from as far back as 4 or 5 years ago, that some significant portion of large organizations will want to be able to represent themselves with their best possible face and their best possible experience in new and unique ways for their customers, for their partners, for their suppliers, et cetera. And so the reason I say that is that you think about somebody like a McDonald's or a Walmart or a CVS or something like that, and you realize that they're already at the edge. All their stores are at the edge. And so interestingly enough, many of those companies are actually doing edge solutions in their stores. But by doing edge solutions in their stores, they're effectively reaching the vast majority of their potential target audience, right? With low latency, in theory. But for every Walmart or McDonald's, how many companies are there out there that don't have that access point? That their only access point historically has been through an advertising page or through mail order catalogs or by selling something on Amazon or eBay or something like that. And they don't have that direct in proximity access to customers on a national or global level. And so the opportunity associated with Edge, from my perspective, is that it gives those companies that potential opportunity. And when you think about IT as a technology landscape in general, one of the things that's kept me in the technology space forever is that it perpetually challenges me to find new ways to use what we already have or ways to use new ideas that enter the market to solve problems that have always existed.
Okay, you're leading into my next question here, Mark. Yeah. This is something that's been bugging me for a while. Yep. Edge computing sounds to me, or you could argue that it is just computing what we've always been doing right along. We just stuck the word edge in front of it to make it sound magical or as a different way to say not cloud. So is there something technologically distinct about edge computing and it's not just marketing hype?
No, there absolutely is. I mean, the designs around application and operationally supporting environments will be very different from what have historically been done for enterprise apps or even cloud-based apps. Over time, you'll see a morph. I mean, initially, we're going to see lots of entry points into the market, what might be considered distributed infrastructure as highly virtualized in many places. Each location is largely independent of each other. In other places, it'll be edge, but what it'll really be is a grouping of technologies, IoT devices, et cetera, with onboarded compute of some sort, maybe in a camera, in a face reader, in a car or whatever, that are working together to create answers in real time. For some significant percentage of applications that will eventually get to the edge, there will be an opportunity to leverage something that looks more cloud-like, but is at the edge, but is still going to need to be designed differently than what we've historically assumed makes sense. And I'll give you a couple of examples relative to the operations piece, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about the applications piece, although I don't really consider myself an expert on application design. more envisioning to solve for application problems. But when you think about infrastructure, you know, even Google, if I remember right, their motto internally is a 50% improvement in performance per individual year over year. So in other words, even if they their infrastructure from 1 year to the next, they're only going to hire 50% more people in order to do that. And or whatever it is, whether is that my math might be off, maybe it's 3%. I can't remember how it all adds up. But you get the idea that it's not a linear mapping of I add 100 machines, I add another body. I add 500 machines, I add five more bodies. That model's mm-hmm. gone out the window for many, many years, especially at the hyperscale. And I think Edge magnifies that requirement even more. And so when I think of deployments, especially when we're talking about consolidated infrastructure of any kind, whether it's highly virtualized, whether it's just some bare metal that people can leverage for different use cases, or whether it's something that's more cloud-like, my expectation is that over time, we're going to have to get several things accomplished. One, we're going to have hardware platform management tools that far exceed what most organizations use today and allow for hundreds or even potentially thousands of sites to be managed from a remote location. Second, you're going to need to define your environments so that they can withstand a significant amount of resilience-oriented headaches. So think Chaos Monkey, but for edge infrastructure. Chaos Monkey being a reference to the tools that have been open sourced from Netflix for helping mm-hmm. them identify problems in their infrastructure and applications. And it, you know, it's Chaos Monkey, Chaos Gorilla, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, when I think long term, I think, you know, an edge environment may be something that looks like a case or an ATM machine in the closet of a Walgreens, and your local delivery driver for Aquafina or UPS might be your certified mechanic using the robot that's built into the box to automatically remove a broken piece of hardware and replace it with a new one, or to replace the whole unit, or the unit is designed to be thrown away in its entirety, or encrypts the data if somebody spills a bucket of ice water or mop water on or near the device, anything like that. But the basic idea is that when people talk about the edge being too expensive from a premium real estate standpoint, I believe that they are approaching the problem or the opportunity from the wrong place. And they're approaching that problem from the perspective of, this is how we do it now. And if I stretch what I do now, it's going to be too expensive. But that's not the way you should be looking. When you look at the edge, you should be challenging every single assumption you think is gospel for how to build, how to deploy, and how to manage structure. And you need to be looking at tools, you know, out there, and some that I'm more familiar with, so I'm going to mention them. But companies like RackN or Mutable.io, you know, these are companies that allow you to do things with infrastructure in remote locations quickly and easily with tools that allow for automatic updating without affecting production, all the way down to the BIOS and firmware level, reinstalling OpenStack or Kubernetes, if that's what you want or need in these locations, stuff that are still considered magic by most enterprise organizations, be done, you know, in hundreds or thousands of locations now. You know, these are the kinds of tools that need to be implemented. And when they are implemented, when you've designed applications around leveraging that kind of infrastructure, you're actually in a position to not only offer applications and infrastructure as cost effectively or more than you might in a traditional large data center or hyperscale environment, but you're much more capable of keeping that environment up to date, keeping it low risk from a security standpoint, and, you know, just to touch on that for a second. And this is the real conversation that I had, and I'm not going to name names because I think it's too embarrassing. But you have 100 locations globally, and you're using OpenStack. And this isn't necessarily a full OpenStack problem, although I might argue that OpenStack contributed to it. Their process for upgrading each site took days now and caused customer interruptions. So imagine you've got 1,000 locations, and one of your customers, and this is a real, I'm going to use a real scenario, one of your customers does highly secure controlled access to control systems for critical infrastructure, critical facilities. And you tell them not only you're going to have the site down, but it might be down for 3 or 4 days. And oh, by the way, their site is 6 weeks into the work effort, but there's a 0 day threat to the hardware or the software in the Vim layer right now, right? That's not an option as far as I'm concerned. So those kinds of things need to be considered and solved for. And whether you use partners or do it yourself, you know, my clear advice is that your assumptions about how many people to hardware, the value of an individual piece of hardware versus an overall environment, your ability to look for ways to share and leverage existing infrastructure and investments, all of these are questions among many others that beg good answers before you attempt to make a major investment and go out to edge.
Yeah, some of what you're saying reminds me a lot of the conversation that I started to have as people began migrating to the cloud. And on premises, they had, you know, maybe 100 servers, and they were used to maintaining those 100 servers. And a lot of them were virtualized, but they had fun names sometimes. And you just got, there was a lot of care and feeding that went on. And when they shifted to a cloud mentality where they had this very flexible and scalable infrastructure, they weren't taking advantage of it. They were still trying to manage it like it was their old data center with 100 servers and trying to get them to shift their mindset to the idea of being able to spin up 1,000 servers, but then you can pull them down. Now, yeah. I feel like you're shifting it again, but by at least a power of 10, right? We're going from 1,000 to 10,000 or 100,000. And they're no longer in a single data center or in a single cloud. They're scattered to the winds.
That's right. I mean, I'm already in discussions with customers that want dozens of sites and already have dozens of sites. And so it's not unfathomable that, you know, 3 or 4 years from now, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of enterprises and technology companies that are operating infrastructure and or leveraging applications on someone else's infrastructure in tens of thousands of locations around the world. And so considering how best get there, one problem, right? So when I say how best to get there, what does Mark mean? Well, Mark means that if you think that the best way to get to 100 locations is to build a data center in every one of those locations, imagine the overhead just in the due diligence, let alone the actual building of the infrastructure and hoping you use it all. Right. So what's the best option then? What's the best alternative? Well, you find someone who can get you into other people's locations that have been forgotten or maybe were even never even meant for what you need it for, but can serve the need. And what about hardware? Do you have to use all of your own hardware? Does your original design of always using a specific Dell or Supermicro or HP build, is that the right answer? Or could you potentially share in a global marketplace? And again, I'm not saying every one of these things has an easy answer, but these are the kinds of areas of opportunity, from my perspective, that allow someone to get into a market with a smaller footprint at lower risk and evaluate the market opportunity for a longer period of time before they have to pull the trigger on major CapEx spend.
You said market opportunity, you mentioned, you know, products evaluation, which brings to my mind the fact that all the big public cloud providers do not want to miss out on their market opportunity to do something with Edge. In other words, if Edge is a problem or if Edge is a solution for people's computing needs, they don't want to miss out on that computing time. You've got Azure Stack Edge, Anthos, local zones, et cetera. Hey, do public cloud the same way, only at the edge. Is that where companies that are invested in public cloud, is that where they should be looking to do their edge computing? Because there are a zillion startups, it seems like, out there, a whole bunch of different stacks where you can do edge in a variety of ways. Yeah. But if you're all in on public cloud, I mean, does that help you operationally where maybe you should keep doing it that way?
Well, I would argue that one of the first problems that many of the cloud providers, I mean, like, let's pick Outpost as an example, which has certainly created a significant amount of visibility being part of AWS. But Outpost is effectively an extension of the AWS environment, the cloud environment. And it's so much of an extension of that cloud environment that it's actually AWS. And I find it ironic that the vast majority of customers that I talk to who are building Edge because they can't afford to own the risk of something being connected all the time, because it can't stay connected all the time. And so what's the value of putting significant amount of investment in a rack or two of hardware only to have it be not available when your network connection is not available? Especially if the whole point of having that environment was to have that edge environment near the edge where the actual consumer would benefit from it being local. So do I think that those environments, Anthos, Azure Stack, Outpost, Huawei's version, AliCloud's version, Tencent's version, do I think that they won't find places? No, I think they will. And they'll find because Edge is a multi-cultural place and because they have a bully pulpit. That being said, there are already several dozen Edge or edge-like solutions that are on the market that are only expanding on a daily basis and with more to come. And you can pick Fastly, you could pick Cloudflare, you could pick Akamai. Akamai was almost all CDN five or six years ago. Now they're an applications and security-oriented company at the edge. Cloudflare was mostly distribution. Now they're routing and their worker environment is to some degree, an edge type model. There are other companies that are allowing you to deploy containers and distribute them wherever you want to on a network that they've established using other people's infrastructure, like a combination of Equinix or AWS or whatever, in order to facilitate being in lots of locations. The point being that when we look at large numbers, we assign a value to them. And certainly, you can't ignore the fact that a company like Equinix, as an example, has 250 global locations. That's an enormous number of data centers. Wow. You know, the after Digital Realty, there's not anybody even close to Digital Realty and Equinix in that space. And yet, Akamai has more locations than that for what it's doing at the edge. Mm-hmm. And there are many companies that are looking to have anywhere from 3,000 to 4,000, 5,000 locations just in a place the size of North America over time. So when you're looking for that kind of flexibility and you're looking for the ability to provide something that not only generates new revenue and customer experiences, but allows for some level of autonomy for local populations, that model isn't necessarily the stay the same route opportunity that the big folks have, right? And when you're talk about the innovator's dilemma, to some degree, that innovator's dilemma really applies to these folks who have spent all of their life and all of their marketing dollars and all of their design on building really, really, really big things in as few locations as they can.
I think one of the things that still sits in my mind is like the scale and the scope of what needs to be managed by the operators that are going to be, you know, have this edge architecture foisted upon them. And even if you have like a public cloud provider that's providing the infrastructure or Cloudflare is providing the workers, you as the ops person are still responsible for the next step up in the stack. So are there like solutions that are emerging to help the operations person deal with this massive sprawl? Or is that still like a very contentious area where it's just bash scripts and hope?
Well, that's frankly, the two companies I mentioned earlier, and especially at the level that you've described, RackN, in my mind, is likely the best platform on the market for doing just that. And so as a longtime practitioner, I apologize for getting on my soapbox, but as a longtime practitioner, when I'm going to implement something, there are things that I take into account as kind of must-haves or must acknowledge before I take them into account. And so if I'm going to implement, this new environment in another data center in my string of data centers for my company, then I have to assume that I'm going to have enough network to leverage it, and I'm going to have enough people to take it to support it, and then I'm going to have enough support from the hardware providers in general to make sure that if I have breakage or repair requirements, that they'll be able to satisfy my needs regardless of where the other location is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so all of those are factors in in what you have to think about when you deploy new infrastructure. And edge is, as you mentioned earlier, you know, times 10. And so to take that, you know, a limited number of concerns that I mentioned already and exacerbate those a little bit more, think about, and maybe you don't have to think about this, maybe this is not something that you've worried about on a daily basis, but I've, you know, my history in IT tells me that there are never enough hours in the day to do all the things that you actually should do, not just the ones you want to do, but the things you should do, right?
And you guys are laughing because you... Mark, I document everything right then. I don't go home until it's done, always.
That's right.
Come on.
And every time a new driver comes out that helps to provide better security on the old HP NIC cards you have, they're always updated on time. And,
oh, yes.
And when there's a spinning disk firmware update that comes out, all the hard environment gets evaluated. You know, all have those stories. And we all go home at night thinking, if I just had another 3 hours every day, or I could hire another six people or whatever the case may be, I would solve for those. Well, when you're talking about delivering services to external customers, and you're talking about delivering them to, you know, tens or hundreds or thousands of locations, you can't let that stuff be your nightmares. You just can't. And so tools like RackN don't just allow you to deploy Kubernetes to 100 locations in 10 minutes, but they allow you to recycle the images in the environment while in production, while doing updates either to Kubernetes, to the individual images themselves, or to the underlying hardware, regardless of the hardware type. And so if you take the points that we made there and think about the value and potential opportunities and the assumption busting, the first assumption that might be hidden there that people wouldn't capture is the hardware types, that it doesn't care what kind of hardware you're using. And if you need to expand into some local hardware that happens to be extra in the colo data center that you're sharing, and that's an option, you can do that. If you want to apply patches, and in production, you can do that. And you can manage these hundreds of sites from one dashboard. And these are things that really bust the assumptions for what you quote unquote have to do or assume you have to do in order to leverage any kind of extended infrastructure environment that might look like Edge.
There's no place like ::1. There's no place like ::1. And if that doesn't mean anything to you, you might want to consider some IPv6 training, because make no mistake, if you're working in cloud, IoT, or security, IPv6 is part of your life. Hexabuild helps large organizations successfully adopt IPv6 through comprehensive training and education. But if you don't work at a large organization, don't worry. One of their open enrollment classes can work for you. Just visit their website at hexabuild.io and click on the training link. There's a myriad of ways that IPv6 can impact your work and your organization. Maybe your company is using AWS to develop a mobile application, or you are managing disparate networks from mergers and acquisitions. IPv6 could be a blind spot in your organization's security landscape, or you might just be struggling to make do with an ever-dwindling supply of public and private IPv4 address space. A solid plan for IPv6 adoption and training can help, and that is where Hexabuild comes in, by providing education and training for you and your team on IPv6, professional services and consulting on your IPv6 initiatives, and assessments, audits, workshops, and more to help your team effectively learn and use IPv6. If this sounds interesting to you, we've got a special offer just for Packet Pushers listeners. Go to training.hexabuild.io and use the discount code PACKETPUSHERS, all one word, to get your 10% discount and some sweet free stickers. I know I'm in it for the stickers and the IPv6 knowledge too. Once again, that's training.hexabuild.io and use the discount code PACKETPUSHERS.
You brought up hardware, and I think it would be good to get down to the nuts and bolts a little bit of what does an infrastructure edge deployment even look like? I mean, if we're breaking it up into like the traditional silos of compute, storage, networking, et cetera, maybe we start with the compute layer. What does that look like? Is it like all just a big stack of Raspberry Pis? Is it all ARM processors, or are you allowed to bring in some traditional x86 stuff?
Well, and that's the cool, you know, the cool thing and the complex thing, right, is that there will be situations where, you know, whether it's a handful of Raspberry Pis or it's a dense enough environment that you've got a rack full of Raspberry Pis, that they solve the problem. But one of the problems that I'd seen before starting my company was that the people deploying had a specific solution model, operational model for performance and capability in mind. And the customer needed to buy into that model and or be deploying something that made sense in that model for them to use it. Well, let's, you know, before I go into the hardware anymore, and I still will, think about how you deploy certain web apps. Think about how you deploy certain ERP apps. Think about how some apps are designed using different languages. Think about how some apps are designed for higher I/O or lower I/O, how some apps are designed for being more latency resistant, and some apps are designed around maximizing the opportunity of really low latency, et cetera, et cetera. And so when you think about all those factors, you realize that there is no one way to deliver an enterprise of potential applications that might go out to the edge, whether that's 1, 5, 7, 10 different applications or application models. And whether that edge is for all of your campuses plus consumers plus partners, or, you know, you need 5 or 6 just for your consumer base, whatever the case may be, you quickly realize that there is no one deployment model that solves for all of those things. Whether that deployment model is at the software layer in the stack of this distributed infrastructure or at the hardware level. And so that causes problems for customers. And so I would argue that the ability to leverage almost anybody's infrastructure is going to be key. And the reason why that's important is because it becomes very inefficient to build a stack of infrastructure, supports x86, supports GPUs, supports ARM, supports, you know, et cetera, all stack. So find a way to be able to deploy applications quickly and easily to the right infrastructure is something that, you know, is still kind of a little bit of a nirvana from an edge standpoint. But what some of us are hoping to do is create a flexible enough quantity and type and location of edge and the base infrastructure, even data center infrastructure, that someone can find what they need in almost any location, similar to how, you know, some nights when you're on a trip, you may only want to stay at a Courtyard, and other nights when you're on a trip, you may want to stay at a Ritz-Carlton. And so your ability to deliver apps where and how you need them is, in my mind, really crucial to being able to limit the overhead and impact of attempting to gain market entrance for anyone consuming edge. So, you know, in a simple answer, yes to everything you said. It's all going to be needed, and finding the right ways to deploy it and use it, back to my point about busting assumptions, is really key to making it successful. But my last point, and maybe I'm the only one that cares about hearing me say this, maybe no one else does, but what you said, I believe, is part and parcel with where IT come to from a historical standpoint. And where it's come to from my perspective is that we are much closer to what a IT practitioner like me would believe is nirvana. And that is that you can use best fit, right? And historically, we've all made really, really pragmatic decisions about how much bandwidth to use, what kind of network to design, what kind of hardware could we use, because we, you know, most of the stuff we're deploying doesn't have scale in the billions of people. And we can't afford to design unique code to leverage GPUs for 10% of the time, et cetera, et cetera. And now that opportunity has changed markedly. And the more this market develops, I think the more customers will recognize that there actually is a huge amount of opportunity to literally create the tiny slice of the pie that you need specifically to solve a unique problem. And that's when edge will really start to explode.
It's interesting the way you describe the stack, Mark, because it's whatever you need it to be. There's a company out there that's going to put the stack together for your specific edge computing problem, which is interesting. Because I was almost imagining something, I guess, a little more generic. But you know, but as you say, this becomes a very specialized area that can be exactly what you want. So okay, we talked about compute in a raw way. What about storage? Is there a kind of a generally accepted way you're going to do storage at the edge? It's not a big honking Santa Ray sitting under a cell tower, probably. So,
yeah. Well, that's a big discussion all by itself, guys. I mean, we could spend a half an hour just talking about how that will work or won't work. But like any solution space, there is no one size fits all, as we already talked about. You know, more specifically relative to chip strategy or design, and storage is similar. Where I think what's important to consider, though, is that from a simple majority standpoint, meaning well over 50%, maybe it's not 75%, but it's definitely over 50%, data and access to and leveraging of lots of data quickly has been the key, right? So I think for many of the analytics-related workloads that we're going to see at the edge, which again, I think are going to be a big percentage of workloads, I think having pretty decent storage in proximity to the compute, meaning, you know, less than a yard away via cable, I think is really going to be important.
You're talking about fast access to large data sets.
That's right.
A lot of IOPS that we can chew through, right? Because we're doing big number crunching and we don't want storage to become a bottleneck in that application.
That's right. That's right. And imagine that being even worse if you were trying to do that on a public cloud and you had to introduce another 100 plus milliseconds in latency, right? Mm. So it's exacerbated by the fact that heavy analytics are going to be done, and that's going to create a lot of data. Some of the companies that I've talked to about their edge deployments found that even though their original assumptions were that they might send some of the data back home, they realized right away as they were beginning to build out their IoT and their video IoT and localized training for staff, et cetera, that they were creating so much data that centralizing the data no longer made sense. So they were self-proving effectively that edge was a requirement from a physical design standpoint. But over and above that, and even with some of the customers I'm working with now, data being close to the edge is critical from a data sovereignty standpoint, et cetera. And so then The strategy for that data, for instance, if the data was only there to be localized, additional improvements in throughput, like making it all solid state, or making the channels as fat as you possibly could to and from the CPU, may not be that important. It may just be important that you can store the data there and that you can get access to it in proximity to the regional or national requirement. But that being said, I think that most of us, if we're worried about a path or worried about a step function, a function that includes many steps, if we find one function step that's fat and we can shorten it, then we shorten it. If there are 10 more function steps and there are some things we can squeeze out of those function steps to make them more efficient, it just becomes a cost and ROI analysis. And if it's easy enough to do it and relatively cost effective to do it, then you do it. And if winning more customers, differentiating more for the customer, more sense, there'll be more high through IO solutions that reduce latency impact even more. I think, again, back to the point we were talking about before, I don't think single answer. I think that the real answer is that there will be a lot of data created. And I think that this is going to drive high density compute in front of wherever you're storing that data on. And so that's going to be a differentiator from an environmental standpoint to what people are used to. Because if you're worried about latency, if you're worried about getting access to lots of data, then you want to put compute as close to that data as you possibly can. Meaning, if you can make a network cable 1 yard instead of 2 yards, you do it. If you can put the storage in the rack right next to the CPUs, you do it. And if you can't get enough CPUs in a 5 kW rack, like most data centers are, then you put it in a different rack where you can get 10 or 15, because you can always speed up the storage but it's limited by how much processing power you can put in front of it. And frankly, you know, storage and storage networking has improved much more quickly than reciprocal performance improvements that have occurred, especially in the x86 market.
Right. It kind of reminds me of high frequency trading and some of the things that they would do to just shave that not even millisecond, that microsecond off of trade times, because that was the difference between making a fortune and making nothing.
Right.
So yeah, but I guess my pushback would be, are there really that many organizations that have this kind of extreme need? I mean, financial trading is a very niche thing where there's tons of money involved. So this is really important for them to get right. So I'm just curious, how many companies are there out there that really have this sort of either sub-millisecond latency or these really strict requirements where there's as much money on the line as there would be with a financial trading firm?
Yeah, I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of an enormous number of situations where the kind of latency that they worry about in Monte Carlo simulations or, you know, trading for, you know, hedge funds at the edge. I think we're more likely to be worried about the difference between 3 and 10 milliseconds, maybe, and certainly between 10 and 20 milliseconds. And the reasons for that initially will be some that I think a lot of people are familiar with. Things like, you know, if you're doing traffic management or if you're doing an environment where the locale of people, drivers, vehicles of some sort, robotics, et cetera, benefit from really instant information, because not because of any one usage, but because of the combined effect of multiple or hundreds of a particular item being used, again, whether it's a robot or a vehicle or some other machinery or even a lot of people in a dense environment. I think that those kind of latency numbers will really become valuable. Certainly, as we do more remote training for people, one company I talked to, large retailer with thousands of locations around the world, thinks that they'll be able to save millions of dollars a year per location by doing remote training instead of centralizing the training like they historically have. And some of the tools they'll use for that are AR and VR. And the numbers vary. The low number for successful AR or VR, excuse me, is usually around 5 milliseconds, and the high is usually around 12 milliseconds. But most of the people that I believe, you know, really scientifically understand the eye to motion sensitivity range, say it's somewhere around 7 milliseconds that you need to beat. And so I think those are some of the numbers initially. But when you think about, you know, this is where, again, where why I love IT so much is that when we make this environment available and people start learning what they can and can't do relative to latency and localized analytics, et cetera, then we'll discover a whole new class of opportunities that people aren't even thinking about. Maybe those opportunities have always been there, but no one's ever thought that they were worth pursuing because of the potential investment versus return on. And so, you know, I was just talking with some friends the other day about the notion that, you know, what happens if we make Edge an autonomous medical room in highway rest stops, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have a problem, like you have your Fitbit says your heart rate is going crazy, or you're about to have an aneurysm, or your breathing has become erratic, or whatever the case may be. And what if you could pull over and literally have the equivalent of a nurse practitioner or even a doctor remotely look at you and take care of you in these rooms? If you're going to provide that kind of service, in a racing ambulance is another example where I hear people are already doing testing in this kind of with this kind of idea. The latency of even a few milliseconds can make the difference between, you know, cutting the right artery or cutting the wrong artery or making a bigger cut than you were supposed to, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think in the near term, what we're looking for is differentiation at value. So how much differentiation can I make for my customers? And what value does that bring me, and how much does it cost me? And I think we're going to see a lot of opportunity in that space, because so many of the applications that we use every day, and certainly people that are working from anywhere now versus traditional, you know, working from home and going into the office, this will apply to as well. So many of the applications and security processes that we use today are based on a combination of best effort and or good enough. And people get used to good enough, but when you show them something more comfortable, more successful, all of a sudden good enough is not good enough. And so for those companies that find the right ways to break the assumptions and leverage the edge to provide unique experiences to their consumers, then that, you know, that 5 to 20 millisecond range that we were talking about just now potentially becomes really, really important.
Let's pause this fascinating podcast, Ned, because you and I have to talk about our sponsor, VMware. We're having the annual VMworld conference. Well, I say we like it's you and I. I mean, it's not us. It's VMware's doing the thing, and it's digital, and it's online, and it's free this year. And hey, we're both registered.
Yes, indeed. And there are some really interesting sessions that I plan to attend. I think the topics that I'm most interested in are everything that's happening with Tanzu. Like that whole platform, whether it's mission control or what's been bundled into vSphere to get Kubernetes going, I've been looking through the session catalog and there's just a ton of stuff for me to learn there. And hey, anything to do with VMware running on one of the public cloud providers also grabs my attention. What's pulling you in, Ethan?
Well, first of all, I'm laughing because you said Tanzu and it's like, he's a Kubernetes believer. He believes.
I do.
I guess I mostly do too. But well, of course me, I went after all the networking stuff. So a lot of NSX stuff. So there's a session here about shifting to distributed systems architecture using NSX, and there's some performance related stuff, and there's a container networking deep dive, and all that kind of stuff is really cool to me. And of course, VMware Cloud on AWS networking deep dive is another session that I'm very keen on, because there's a lot of plumbing that's going on behind the scenes to make all of this interesting stuff happen.
Right. So if this sounds interesting and enticing to you, dear listener, we've got a registration link for you to hit up. It's special just to Day 2 Cloud, because that's how awesome we are. And you can find that registration link. It's bit.ly/D2C VMworld. That's bit.ly/D2C VMworld. And we thank VMware for being a sponsor of the Day 2 Cloud podcast. Sure. It sort of reminds me a little bit of the opportunity that existed when the World Wide Web was growing up. And you had this common platform of TCP/IP and HTTP. So we had those two things sort of laid out as the standard, but everything else was kind of up for grabs. And at first, everyone just kind of went down the easy route. Oh, you know, we'll set up an internet for newspapers. We'll set up an internet for message boards or something. And it was all fairly humdrum. But then it took us like 10 years to come up with these other solutions. And those solutions have obviously done pretty well. I mean, the most valuable companies in the world are the internet companies.
That's right.
When I think about what allowed that, it was having this like common set of protocols that was the web browser with HTTP and the transport underneath it with TCP. Is there like a common platform or protocol or something for Edge that is going to allow that sort of innovation above and below the stack?
Yeah, I think over time there's likely to become some standards there. I don't see that happening in the next 2 or 3 years, certainly. But you know, some form of control plane or you know, shared access model to infrastructure that allow people to control across infrastructure sets and across networks, I think is vital for long-term leverage of the infrastructure. And you know, I believe that for a number of reasons. I believe that because it's a way to go long-term, but two, I believe that because I think we're going to find over the next 5 or 6 years the same problems that we faced and solved for in the you know, the growth of the internet experience that you talked about. And so to use a comparison, let's say for instance that it's, you know, year 2000 and Google's been around for 23 or 24 years. So I don't remember the exact year they started, but they were still building hardware and deploying hardware and getting the same usage metrics from each piece of hardware today, 24 years later, as they were, you know, in the first or second year they started the company. Two things at a minimum would happen. One, they wouldn't be able to afford to offer the service. Nobody would be able to afford to use it or market on it because it would be too expensive. And three, they're already covering thousands of acres with data centers, and they would have to be 6 or 7 times larger today, let alone what they would be tomorrow or the next year when they double again, and what kind of footprint that would require. So these are step opportunities and step changes in how IT is deployed and managed, similar to going from a mini computer to a tower computer, from a tower computer to a 1RU server, from a 1RU server to a 4 U server with 8 blades in it, from a server with 8 blades to a server with 8 blades and 6 VMs running on it, to a server with a handful of VMs and 1,000 containers running on it. All of these things are necessary changes for IT to continue to grow. And Edge is likely, most definitely, going to suffer from that problem if any of our prognostications about the potential size of Edge come true. And so finding the right ways to leverage the existing infrastructure as much as possible begs for some level of standard, but also begs for something that might look more like a sharing economy, so that we are effectively, usage pattern sharing across infrastructure sets, regardless of who the original implementer of the infrastructure was.
All right. Yeah, it's going to be a wild world out there in the next 5 to 10 years. So everybody, buckle up, right?
Exactly.
As we're working to wrap up here, I'm curious if you have some key takeaways for practitioners out there. What should they know about the edge, and how can they get prepared to be involved in the opportunity at the edge?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of places to look for information, and certainly getting involved in discussions never hurts, right? I'm definitely a community involved guy. And so I've participated in CNCF as a board member. I participated in the Eclipse Foundation temporarily, and not because I didn't want to continue, but just because Ericsson, where I was working, wasn't that interested in participating. I participate in an organization called International Data Center Authority for a long time as their head of their technical chair. So I love contributing, and I think that's the best way to get involved, one of the best ways to get involved. But like, for instance, on my LinkedIn profile, I will regularly post questions to challenge my own assumptions and get people involved. And some of those discussions run into the dozens and even hundreds of comments and feedback loops, and people find them, including myself, very educational. Over and above that, there are there is LF Edge, the Linux Foundation Edge group. I think that's a great place to look, help you with definitions, help you identify companies that are working in the space, what some of the open tools are in the space, et cetera, and find companies that have actually been deploying or are deploying Edge, and talk to them, find out what they're doing and why they're doing it and how they're doing it. And I mentioned that last because that's probably one of the hardest to accomplish. But there is no shortage of resource out there if you take the time to look. And it really, in the end, it's kind of like learning Microsoft Word, but not ever having to write a document for another 6 months. You need, if you want to go out and learn Edge, start high, learn the concepts, learn some of the business model opportunities, identify places where people have actually solved problems, and then relate that to your business. When you can identify a why in your business that fits one of those models or an adjacent model, then go out and begin the next level of investigation into the specific technologies, service offerings, partners, et cetera, that are working in this that might be able to help you to solve that unique problem. But otherwise, it's like saying, go learn about grass by reading the whole library, right? There's just so much out there.
Well, if people would like to follow you and know and some of these questions that you're asking, where should they look?
Well, my LinkedIn profile, certainly. I'm fairly active there. And oftentimes there are some really incredibly good conversations in there by people that really are smart, not like me. I mean, not, people that just play doctor on TV, but are actual doctors are commenting. And people like Simon Crosby and Rob Hirschfeld and Antonio Pellegrino and people like this that are just really, really smart about this environment. And other than that, so I would, that would just be LinkedIn and Mark Teeley. Other than that, I'm fairly active on Twitter as well. And you can follow me there at mteeley10. So that's mtieley10. And of course, if you're really bored and you want to solve the world's problems by leveraging Mark Teeley's greatest idea ever, you can go to edgevana.com.
Very cool. Well, we'll include links to all of those in the show notes. Mark Teeley, thank you so much for being a guest today on Day 2 Cloud.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation, guys. It's been fantastic.
Awesome. And hey, dear listener, virtual high fives to you for tuning in and listening to this whole amazing episode. You know, I bet you have some great ideas for future shows, and we'll never know about that unless you tell us. So hit either of us up on Twitter. Ethan is at EC Banks and I'm at Ned1313. Or you can fill out the form on my fancy website, nedinthecloud.com. Did you know that Packet Pushers has a weekly newsletter? It's called Human Infrastructure Magazine, and it is loaded with the best stuff that we've found on the internet, plus our own feature articles and commentary. It's free and it doesn't suck. So get the next issue via packetpushers.net/newsletter. Until next time, just remember, cloud is what happens while IT is making other plans.